Accomplishment Coaching is proud to present the following fine programming. Accomplishment Coaching, where coaches lead and leaders coach. AccomplishmentCoaching.com.
Welcome back to The Coaching Show with your host, Master Certified Coach Christopher McCullough.
Well, thank you, Dick Warren, and I'm delighted to introduce you to an extraordinary coach, a leader, a powerhouse in her own right. We have with us today as our guest co-host, Lisa Pachenz. You can find out more by going to, you're going to have to tell me the website again, Lisa, I'm sorry.
No problem. CoachingWithLP.com.
I'm so sorry. Coaching with LP. It was so simple that I was afraid I had it wrong. CoachingWithLP.com. Lisa Pachenz is an East Coaster, proudly representing her home of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and just a powerhouse coaching C-suite executives and leaders, as well as entrepreneurs and innovators in almost every arena. Lisa, anything you want people to know about you, or you want to get right to our next guest? What do you feel like?
Sure. Well, I think what I want people to know about me is that I'm such a stand for this work, such a stand for transformation and people going outside their comfort zones, you know, like what Josh was talking about today, really disrupting the status quo and looking at what would have their lives go differently and what that would be like outside of them, not just for their lives, but for other people's lives, and really bringing this type of conversation absolutely everywhere. So it's a super exciting time to be a coach, to be a thought leader. And there's a lot of movement in our community, in our culture. Mm-hmm. So with that said, I would love to introduce our next guest, which is Donna Carol Voss. Is she on the line?
She is.
Fantastic. Donna, welcome to the call. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yes. So Donna is an author. If anyone can talk to the idea that we can change course in our lives, it is Donna Carol Voss. She is a Berkeley grad, a former pagan, a stay-at-home mom, mother to three adopted siblings, a devout Mormon, and an author whose opinions have been widely read in The Blaze, The Huffington Post, and The Federalist, as well as in her multiple books. So clearly a study in an extreme. She is a 50-something homemaker who loves rap music, outrageously expensive shoes, and people who own their flaws and call her on hers. And Donna, you just came out with the book One of Everything.
Yes.
What was it like to create this book about your life, beautifully open, deliciously vulnerable, and on loudspeaker?
I wasn't setting out to do anything of the kind. I just stumbled onto a writing conference, and who knew you were supposed to bring writing samples? So I thought, what do I know? And so I thought, well, I'll just write about what I know, which obviously was me. And as I started to tell the story, I realized it was like this geyser in there that wanted to come out. So it's ironic that when I was writing it, I thought, oh, I'll go on to write fiction. But after I'd written it, it became quite clear that what I really wanted to do was write political commentary and socio-political things like I do for The Federalist.
Mm. What are your politics? You know, given your background as a self-described pagan and a Berkeley grad, we would expect one thing. But your latest blog post, things like "Would Jesus have walked out on Mike Pence?" and you know, your call for action against ISIS, we're getting a very different viewpoint of your politics. Where are you? How do you describe yourself? Do you ascribe to a certain dogmatic thinking, or where are you?
Not dogmatic, but I would say from the Berkeley days where I had just, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid that America was awful, that white people were awful, that Christians were awful, that Republicans were awful. So I was all in for that. And then fast forward, I don't have time for the story, but Ronald Reagan's re-election in 1984, that was the turning point for me. When I saw that the whole country had voted red, except for Mondale's home state of Minnesota, a little light went on. There's other ways to look at the world. And then from there, you know, like Margaret Thatcher says, the facts of life are conservative. So I, you know, had a job and a home and got married and had kids. And I would say now I am a very open-minded conservative. So, for instance, I'm a big believer in medical marijuana because I think it's awful to make people who are suffering suffer any more than they have to. And someone with cancer, you know, marijuana is so helpful for the nausea. But short of that, I'm pretty down-the-line conservative.
Well, then let's take away the open-minded part. Because what's so is you have, you're a one issue liberal with the rest being right of center. Is that fair?
That's pretty fair.
Okay, good. So what is it that, because I'm thinking by and large, at least the people I hang out with are, you know, dyed in the wool, museum quality, as Garrison Keillor used to say, tax and spend liberals. So we're over here, you know, wanting freedom for people, even libertarians these days consider themselves left of the left and right of the right. And more we can see the trend is towards independence and libertarianism in our country, at least in the United States. And we're noticing sort of a global tussle or tangle between the nationalist sensibilities and the populist sensibilities, you know, versus like sort of globalism and nationalism. What are you seeing from your sort of perch in the sort of right of center world that indicates the direction that the world is going is a good one?
Ah, I thought you were going to ask me a different question. I was all set to answer.
I started to, and then I shifted. Yeah, you probably heard it.
I must have read your mind. So let me answer the question I thought you were going to ask me.
Oh, nice.
I do not think that people are going toward something that they feel drawn to. I think they are avoiding, trying to get away from things that are turning them off, that they're very upset by. So I think that explains a lot of the behavior that we're seeing. And I also think that I'm just about to release a book called Nothing to Apologize for, The Truth About Western Civilization. And the thesis of it is that, you know, Western civilization is not all bad. You know, democracy and science and philosophy, even the fact that the Western culture believes in reason and the ability to reason our way forward to a better future. So my point is, you know, we are losing Western culture because we're so afraid to say that white, male, European isn't all bad. It's not all bad. So I do think that people of that persuasion as well in this country have just felt so pressed to the wall. You know, everyone else gets to honor their heritage, and I make the point in the book about the Norman Rockwell paintings. Well, of course it doesn't reflect the racism and the homophobia and all the yucky stuff that was going on, which it's a reflection of how insular that world was, that it doesn't reflect those things, but it does reflect innocence and sweetness and charm, the things that a lot of us do harken back to as part of our childhoods, and we just want a chance to, you know, bring that. We want to bring Western civilization to the party, show it off a little bit, you know, not dominate anyone, but come on, we just want to be there too.
Mm. Thanks for sharing that, Donna. And I'm curious, how do you, with such a, you know, open, change-centered mindset, what are your opinions about the current political landscape, specifically our president, and what kind of advice you would give to those looking for community change?
When you say those looking for community change, are you saying the people that are not happy that he won or the people that are happy that he won?
Both.
The former. Well, both, but I was specifically speaking to the former.
Okay. Well, I just happened to have been at the Republican National Convention.
You just happened to be there?
Just happened to be there. Yes, I was actually a guest co-hosting a radio show out of New Orleans that I am on every Friday called Ringside Politics.
Nice.
They wanted the woman's perspective for that week, so it was fascinating. So I was there. I was very, very, I had a lot of trepidation about him, you know, becoming president. No one was more shocked than I was that he won. And you know what? I have to say, now that he's in the job, I love him. I love him as a president. Wow. Did not like him as a candidate. Love him as a president. So the reassurance for people who didn't are not happy that he won, I don't think there is any. I really don't. You know why? Because I think it is just something, it's almost a religion. Like if somebody came to me, I'm a devout Mormon now, and said, oh, you know, Joseph Smith is a fraud or whatever, it's a cult, I'd be like, whatever. I know that's not true. So I get the feeling that especially the media will wake up, a lot of the leftist media, will wake up every morning going, we know he's guilty. Now what did he do? So I honestly don't think there's a bridge there.
Wow. I have not. I am so delighted. You're like a specimen for me. This is your... First of all, do you know that devout Mormons hate this guy, right?
Oh, I know. I'm in Utah now. I was born and raised in California, but I'm an anthropologist in Utah.
Well, yeah, fair enough. I think anyone who's non-Mormon is an anthropologist in Utah, right? We got anthropologists.
Well, I am Mormon now, but I wasn't baptized till I was 38, so I'm kind of a double agent.
Ah, got it. But here's the thing, right? This guy cannot keep his word on anything. The guy's flip-flops more, like the guy has more opinions on any one topic than anyone we've seen, including your sainted Ronald Reagan. So let's go back and figure out what it is that you like about a guy who can't stick to one position on anything and is actually the reverse, the exact opposite almost, as a president than he was as a candidate.
Well, that's probably why I like him as a president.
Right.
As a candidate.
I hated that guy. This guy I like, but they're the same guy.
I was nervous, and this guy I like. So here's my philosophy all along. I think it is the height of stupidity to think that what a candidate says is what a president does. And not because they're dishonest or whatever else. I think there's no way. It's like becoming a parent, right? You think you know what it is to be a parent. Until you're a parent, you have no idea. So you think you know what you would do as president. Then you sit in that chair, and you have information you didn't have when you were a candidate, number one. Number two, I have an MBA as well, so I look at him very much in the business sense, and I think he's one of those crazy, genius, outside-the-rails bosses who just feeds ideas and motivation and inspiration. And he usually has this very solid managerial team behind him that kind of takes it, calms it down, streamlines it, and executes it. And he doesn't have that now. He has politicians who are not used to taking the initiative. I think the people that are most successful in his administration are Tillerson, who obviously has worked in the private sector. And if he would just get the people in there, although I have to say, you know, the Democrats have not made it easy, especially with their summer resistance. You know, I don't know. I heard Rush Limbaugh say he hoped that President Obama failed, and I thought that was wrong, too. Why would you want the President of the United States to fail? Because he can't go down unless the rest of us do, too.
I'm sorry, did you just quote Rush Limbaugh as an example of what Democrats think?
No, I quoted Rush Limbaugh as a mistake that Republicans made not supporting President Obama. I think it's the same mistake when Democrats don't support President Trump.
Wow. Okay. So you're not going to address or do want to address the distinction between the guy who said X and who's doing Y?
Oh, well...
Because I hold you as a devout Mormon, as a leader, and in everything you've written, which I haven't read everything you've written, but certainly a lot of your blogs and your book, you love people who have integrity. Fair?
Yes.
And this guy, you know, today it's this way, tomorrow it's the other way, and we shouldn't look back.
I don't know if we shouldn't look back, but what's the point? And I do love people with integrity. Those are my favorite people. But I'm very good with difficult people. I'm known to be very good with difficult people. I also have sort of the glass half full attitude toward people. So I am not turned off by people's flaws. I think he has serious flaws. Don't get me wrong. It's just that overall, I'll take those flaws to get what we're getting.
Well, I think that we both deserve lots of acknowledgement for our civil discourse on this matter. Let's get back to some of the books and what you want to provide to the world. Lisa, have you got something for Donna Carol Voss?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the Everything Now, One of Everything, you talk a lot about the world of everything now. So rearing children, that will carry on the exception that is the American culture. So how do we make our kids champions in this world of turmoil, political change, and technology?
Say no a lot and aspire to be told, I hate you, because then you know you're doing your job. I have always made a big distinction between childhood or even adolescence and adulthood. I don't like the whole Peter Pan culture where, you know, a 16-year-old has a brand new car and an iPad and an iPhone and just, you know, designer clothes, because then what is there to aspire to? So I always told my kids, no, you get the childhood. You get the basics right here. You want what I have, you have to work for it. So that's one thing. The other thing is I would, for instance, saving money. We always made my kids, now I have a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old, so they're out, and the 14-year-old is definitely a work in progress. But whenever they made money, we made them save half. They could do whatever they wanted with the other, but they had to save half. And actually, that worked out really well for my oldest son. By the time he was 18, he had enough money to buy a car. So we sort of hand over hand required them to do what we thought was best, and then, you know, ideally they, you know, are at least in that ballpark. Although, honestly, I feel like I did my job. I raised them. I did the very best I could. What they do with it is up to them.
Yeah. You got to push them out of the nest at some point, right?
I hope that I'm intending that they go to Berkeley. I'm using all my brain power to send them to Berkeley.
No, you know what? My kids are adopted. They're a sibling group that we adopted from the county of San Diego when they were 8, 5, and 1.
My hood.
Yeah, of course. I was born and raised in Coronado.
Nice.
But they obviously had to be removed from their birth parents for drug abuse and a lot of other really nasty things. So they are not, they're not ahead of the curve. They're a little bit behind the eight ball. They're awesome kids. I feel like I was the right mother for them because I had all these experiences where, you know, I know what it smells like, looks like, I recognize it. So I thought I was very, very effective for them, but I had to give up early on that, you know, a C average for my kids was awesome.
That's great. And this conversation reminds me a lot of the idea of introducing and focusing on core values inside the family. And I've seen a lot of articles and work around the fact that our culture these days, you know, with religion not being so mainstream and a cultural thing that every family has because it's not so introduced, that we're now focusing less and less on core values inside the family. So what's some advice that you would give to a family that, let's say, isn't so religious but wants to bring in this idea of core values to their family?
I think it's simple. I think you write a mission statement as a family. You know, the parents can have some ideas, but sit down as a family and say, what's important in this family? You know, I'm a big believer. I told my kids over and over, there are no secrets. You can, you know, be discreet. And I also wanted them to know anything that happened. Like my mom, when I was growing up, oh, don't tell the neighbors. We don't want them to know this. And so I wanted my kids to know, whatever happens in this home, there are no secrets. If I mouth off, if I am mean, you are welcome to tell anyone because there are no secrets. I think that's a very freeing thing. The other thing I used to tell them is that self-respect is the most important thing that you can have. And so when you're making a decision, you know, think about what will garner me the most self-respect. But I think it doesn't have to, those two things are not religious. The only thing I would say is influenced by religion in this family is service. You know, Mormons, like service, 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 like little honeybees.
Right. All I love that. So if you don't mind, I'd like to transition the conversation over to the 21st century woman. I am so obsessed with this idea of the 21st century woman and how it differs from feminism in the past. It's a conversation that I'm in with a lot of my clients. I work with a lot of C-suite executive women who want to bring in their authentic power into a man's world, but not do so in a way that creates conflict, but a way that creates partnership. So what's your take on the 21st century woman and how, for our listeners, how does it differ from feminism in the past?
The 21st century woman, I thought you were going to say, rather than create partnerships, basically create inspiration or people, even men, that, you know, can look up to these women. But the difference, I have a chapter in my book, Nothing to Apologize For, The Truth About Western Civilization. It's called Nobody Wins at the Victim Olympics. So I do think that there's, you know, initially there was a lot of power in identifying the oppression, the discrimination of women. Obviously, to get the vote, to be able to own property, you know, the pill, being in the workforce, all that stuff, it needed to be fought like a battle. Well, we won. I mean, we won. If you look at young women today, especially college-educated women in their 20s without kids, they far out-earn their male counterparts. And Carly Fiorina said it best, you know, being a woman in America is choosing the life you want. I just think, just go out there. Don't even think about it. Don't think about men or whatever. Just do your thing. And if you encounter a problem, handle it like you handle any other problem, like an obnoxious coworker or a mean boss. It doesn't have to always devolve to male-female conflict. It's just some people are jerks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it has us looking through the context of everyone are human beings. We're all human beings. There's no division of male-female gender relationship. It sounds like from what you're saying, and I totally believe this, that battle has been won and fought and is over with. And if we bring that struggle and that battle now, then it just creates more disruption. Who would you say are the... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's the point. I think the Jesse Jacksons and the Gloria Steinems and the Madeleine Albrights, I think the point is to perpetuate their job security, so to speak. It's not in their best interest to go, you know what, awesome, success, because then who cares about them?
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So a couple of white women talking about how the people who feel disenfranchised shouldn't.
Oh, I love this topic. Let me say how much I love this topic. I was watching an abysmal video clip yesterday. I don't remember where it was, but maybe it's in Portland, where these students are telling the white students, you have to get white people, get off campus, get off campus. And I saw a young black woman saying, I'm so tired of white people telling black and brown people what, you know, is good for them. And I was thinking, well, it's a good thing we did that when there was slavery, because if white people hadn't come to their senses and gone, you know what, this is wrong, you know, they're not all bad. White people are not all bad. I do think men can have an opinion on abortion. I don't think that you have to be a woman. I do not think, and it's also infuriating to me that this young woman acts like, you know, black people are out in a vacuum, that what they do doesn't affect the rest of us, that doesn't affect our family structure in society, that doesn't affect our poverty, women in poverty. It's just so self-centered, solipsistic, if I may use the word, to think that you and only you can have an opinion about your personal experience. You can have that opinion, but other people also get to say, look, in the aggregate, you know, with a teen pregnancy rate of X or an illegitimacy rate of X, it affects society as a whole. We're allowed as a society to comment.
Well, I love your outspokenness. And although we don't agree on much, including our current president, I so appreciate you being with us today, Donna Carol Voss, and that your voice is loud and proud and available. The book that we're talking about is One of Everything. There's a book coming out called Hail to the Chief. And
oh, it's already out.
And we just found, oh, forgive me, I'm so behind the times. You're prolific, if nothing else.
I am.
And the book that we're looking for is Nothing to Apologize For. You can find out about all those things and read the blog, as well as find out more about her take on 21st century women by going to Donna Carol Voss. That's DonnaCarolVoss.com. Thanks so much for walking into the Lion's Den today and for sharing with us and for being with us. And thanks for your work in the world.
Thank you.
Well,
thanks, Donna.
Thank you. Well, Lisa, that's got exciting, right? Because, you know, in my world, like, our president's sort of a traitor and an enemy of the environment and a whole bunch of stuff. But Donna loves that guy, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it points to what Josh was talking about. We need disruptors in society. We can't have one opinion without having the other.
Yeah. And it's, man, you know, all the sources that she quotes and the people that she doesn't like are, like, exactly the opposite in my book. And how fun. I kind of wanted to just engage with her in a, you know, Bill Maher type of, you know, back and forth for a while. But maybe we'll invite her back for that opportunity or not.
Next time.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Lisa P., what would you like to leave our listeners with today? This is Lisa Pachenz. You can find her on the web by going to www.coachingwithlp.com.
Just thank you for this experience, Christopher, and for Josh and Donna for joining us today. It's such a necessary time in the evolution of humanity. That sounds so significant to have these conversations and really bring to the forefront the conversations that we're not having, that we should be having, like disruption on purpose and leadership from innovation and, you know, even what Donna was talking about in terms of gender equality from this place of influence and innovation. So just thank you.
Good stuff, always.
That conversation.
And this is The Coaching Show here on WSRadio.com or wherever fine podcasts are available. We bring people out on the cutting edge of coaching and thought leaders to you each and every week. Thank you, Lisa Pichenz. Thank you, Donna Carol Voss. And thank you, Josh Linkner. Go get the book, Hacking Innovation. And we will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.
Your search for the right office furniture will be done when you walk into Shore For Sure. In our 46,000 square foot warehouse, you are sure to find the right new or used desk and chair for your home and office. Trusted for over 40 years, Shore is proven to provide great value, quality, and service. From free space planning to our white glove delivery service, you are sure to leave happy and satisfied. We're a family-owned business that will treat you like family for sure. Se habla español.
Do you want to be a professional coach? Are you in business trying to make a real difference with people you manage or work with? Have you started a coaching practice that isn't quite getting off the ground? Get the skills you need to be a successful coach today with the Coach's Training Program from Accomplishment Coaching. The Coach's Training Program will show you how to help others focus and be more fulfilled. Whether you want to improve your company's bottom line or create a thriving coaching practice, Accomplishment Coaching can give you the distinctions and practices you need to coach others effectively today. Accomplishment Coaching has spent 6 years developing a cutting-edge coaches training program that will have you ready to coach people professionally in just 12 months, and you don't have to take time off work to do it. To find out more about the coaches training program, just call 1-888-548-6813. That's 1-888-548-6813.
Hi, Scale listener. This is David Finkel, co-host with Jeff Hoffman of Scale Your Business. I wanted to let you know that our newest book, Scale, was just released and to encourage you to get your copy. The book will give you 7 proven principles to grow your business and get your life back. Scale will help you work less by getting your business to produce more. Get your copy online or at your local bookseller. For more information, visit us online at scaleyourbusinesstoolkit.com.
Cybersecurity is the fastest growing job sector. The San Diego Mayor's Cyber Cup encourages kids to consider computer security as an interesting course of study and a valuable career path. Securing Our eCity helps lead this youth competition to create interest and awareness among students and their schools. The San Diego Mayor's Cyber Cup. Learn more at securingourecity.org or call 619-630-2444.
Do you love wine, but it doesn't love you back in the morning? Then it's time to try Alkotox, the ultimate hangover cure. Alkotox is a dietary supplement that reduces the harmful side effects of alcohol, and it benefits all alcohol consumers, not just those who occasionally overindulge. So now, for less than the cost of a drink, you can wake up hangover-free. To learn more, go to vinvillage.com and let Alkotox make hangovers a thing of the past.